Welcome to My Property World, a light and informative look at all things property. We have designed this series for people involved in property and property finance in the UK market. However, we do take examples from all around the property world. Our aim is for us to make money from property together. Whether that be buying, selling, financing, trading, or getting involved in a deal in another way. We do this by informing, entertaining, and enjoying ourselves talking property, which gives you a chance to get to know us, what we're up to, and to check us out until you're ready to make money together. In the meantime, My Property World is free and fun, so plug in your headphones and enjoy. We would love for you to like, share, and comment, so please do on social media. And if you have questions, ideas for topics, or deals you would like to explore, we're always looking for guests, so get in touch via the My Property World profile.
Hello, and welcome to My Property World. I'm Will Mallard, and I'm joined once again by Lisa Brown. Lisa is one of the founders of supportedlivinggateway.com. And we've asked Lisa to come on the show to talk about her property world, which is actually really interesting. And Lisa, before we even get you to say hello, there's an elephant in the room I want to get out. English people generally are hopeless at talking about themselves. So I'd like to acknowledge that you're putting yourself out there, and we're going to be talking about you and your property world. So thank you. Lisa Brown, you're welcome.
Thanks for having me. Well, you're entirely right. This is the bit I'm uncomfortable with. So yeah, it's good to be talking to you.
And Lisa's been on the show in a couple of other episodes previously regarding the Supported Living Gateway, which you can find out a bit more. It's a platform for matching property with or property investors and their properties with providers of supported living. And if you're one of those, you can check it out at supportedlivinggateway.com. And there's, I believe, an 8-week training program, which I think we covered in one of the previous episodes, for property investors who want to find out a bit more about that. But today we're not talking about the gateway, and we're not talking about just supported living. We're talking about Lisa Brown's property world. How did you get started? So you trained as a nurse.
Yeah, that's right. So my background's in nursing. I worked as a nurse, worked my way up to senior sister roles in emergency departments, and then did some community nursing. But alongside that, without really realizing I was doing it, I was actually sort of doing property, but just on our own property. So I always had a passion for property. My sister jokes and says that from when I was tiny, I was looking in estate agents' windows in the days before we had Rightmove and Zoopla, because I'm that old. And we would look in the estate agent windows and I'd be like, oh, look at those properties, and always been fascinated by them. And actually, as a staff nurse, I was lucky enough to be able to buy a property, a small house in a dodgy bit of Walthamstow in London. And then my husband and I decided we were going to go traveling, and we let our house out. This was before we were married. We let our house out for 6 months. Now, I think we were married actually at that point, but still and that enabled us to go traveling and still pay our mortgage. And I think the benefits of property had always been sort of there for me, just by sort of selling properties, adding value, being able to buy a slightly bigger house next time. So I think I'd kind of done property without really realizing that was a sort of strategy. And then we moved down to Devon, and I struggled to find senior nursing work part-time. Ever since I'd had my children, I'd always been able to work in fairly senior nursing roles part-time, I think because people knew me, trusted me, and were confident that I'd be able to deliver on the roles that I was taking on in a part-time capacity. But obviously moving somewhere new, I was having to convince people again who didn't know me that I could do that on the hours around my children's needs too. So I thought, oh, I'm going to try just doing a bit of property. That's what I decided. Thought I'd have a bit of a go at it. And I thought, because of where we live,
that's a great line, isn't it?
What's that?
I'll give it a go, basically.
Well, yeah. And I thought, because where we live is very beautiful, I thought I would just do a holiday let. Well, let's just do that in the village that I live in. That makes perfect sense. But when I looked at the prices of the properties and the running costs, I got a little bit scared. You know, the council tax would be quite high, all the bills would be quite high. Would I get people in or not? I didn't know anything about any of this at the time. So I was just like, oh no, that seems a bit scary. I started listening to some podcasts. You know, there are great podcasts, great books. There's so much learning you can do for free, you know, isn't the world. You don't need to pay huge amounts of money for property training. There's so much available to you now. And I basically ended up buying a building in Torquay that has two, it was a freehold building that had been divided into two flats without planning permission, been done really badly, but it was actually essentially a really beautiful heritage building. And we refurbished that, did it up beautifully, got tenants into the property and pulled all our money out without really realizing that that was quite a good thing to do. I was like, oh great, we can just go again now. And I thought that was what I was going to be doing, was really beautiful buildings. I thought at that point, I loved putting, you know, the cornicing and the beautiful fireplaces back into the building. And I thought, this is me. I love old buildings. This is what I'm going to be doing forever, is beautiful buildings. And then a real chance encounter, someone asked me, just approached me and asked me whether I would consider developing a property for a young man with learning disabilities. And they said they'd had a landlord who was going to buy this building and the landlord's financing has fallen through. Would I be able to step in and help with this deal? And it kind of interested me. I was like, oh, what's this about then? And I ended up picking up this deal. So this was the complete opposite of those beautiful flats. This was a dodgy 1940s detached bungalow, pebble dash, not very attractive to look at, not of great interest, but actually had the potential to meet this young man's needs considerably. So I took on this bungalow and we developed it to meet his needs exactly. We adapted it. He had quite high level needs and we needed to do quite a lot of adaptation to the property to meet his needs. And I loved it. I loved the process of problem solving, trying to work out how to exactly to adapt it to meet his needs, liaising with the care team, the support staff, everybody who was involved in that process. And it felt so, like it was
so
a really
that
good...
sounds like a fascinating combination of your background to that point, because you had the housing, the design and the getting the end physical result for the property. But it also was merging into the, I suppose, the care element where you'd spent a large part of your professional career at that stage.
Yeah, it felt like a really good fit for me because I was using kind of all my skills on various different levels to work. And we developed this home for this young man, which was amazing and meets his needs. His life has been, from what the care team are telling me when I meet them on other properties now, his life's been transformed by being in the right property. It's a really amazing story of how someone being placed in the right home can really meet their needs. But as a property investor, I had so many problems with that bungalow. It got massively downvalued. I ended up leaving far too much money in the deal than I should have done. I tried to challenge the downvaluation, but because of the lack of mortgage products around, I had nowhere else to go. So I was stuck with that downvaluation. I struggled with the insurance. I struggled with everything from a property investor perspective. However, I knew it was the right thing to do. It just felt like this is what needs to happen. And as soon as I'd finished it, the local authority still used this as a case study of collaboration, talk about how amazing this project is. And I was approached by so many different people after that saying, oh, Lisa, can you do me one of those? Could you do me two of those? Can you do me three of those? And I was like, we need to scale this up. But how do I do that when I was feeling quite hurt and I ended up tying up all of that money in the deal and it wasn't really the right thing to do from an investment point of view? So I ended up just trying to reach out to other property investors and find other people who were doing supported living. And actually, it was really hard to find anyone else who was doing supported living. And I struggled for a while to make any connections with anyone else, but I kind of felt like other people must be doing this. There are the big funds, the big investment funds, and doing this on a massive scale, doing the big block schemes, but who's doing this on a small one-to-one basis for those individuals who just need a home, who need to live on their own in a good, safe home? And I ended up setting...
Go on.
So I ended up setting up a Facebook group. We're now at nearly 3,000 members. And, you know, and reaching out, and through that found loads of really great inspirational people who were doing supported living already, or landlords who are really excited and interested in the idea of making a difference with their property portfolios. And that's been brilliant, because I think landlords and property investors have a really bad press, don't they? Particularly in the UK, of all being money grabbing and evil. And yeah, there are not great landlords around, but actually there's an awful lot of landlords who are good and want to make a difference with their property and want to help people. And that's, you know, as well as it being a good financial investment.
And you, you've ventured into some bigger stuff as well.
Yeah. So on the back of that bungalow project, I was then asked to develop some flats, and I purchased a old social club in Plymouth that we're converting to 13 one-bed flats. This is going to be a mental health support scheme. So the idea is that 12 of the flats will be for tenants with quite high level mental health support needs, and one of the flats will be a staff base staff hub, so there'll be staff on site 24 hours a day, but each of the individuals has their own front door, and they, you know, have their own space, so they can retreat to have their own space but also have staff there when they need them. It's been a real battle, as anyone who's done any bigger projects will know. Well, you know, getting planning in place, we're still struggling with planning. We were supposed to hear on the 7th of December, and we're still fighting different aspects of the planning process. We're getting there, we're getting closer to it, but it's not straightforward and it's not simple. Yeah,
things have an awful habit of taking longer, costing more, and being worth less. But you're committed to a point, and you're not doing this on your own, I believe. So you've got to externally, you're in working in conjunction with the council and a provider. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've got really strong support from the local authority commissioner with this scheme. We've been designing it together from the very beginning. She's putting it out to tender to care providers, but we've got a pretty good idea of which. There's a couple of care providers who I know who'll probably be taking it, but it just depends obviously on the final tender process. So yeah, you're kind of developing it with support and guidance of people, but essentially as the developer, it can still be a bit lonely, can't it? It's you making those decisions and making some of those final decisions that can, it's challenging. It's been a great process. I've learned masses through doing it.
Do you mind us talking a little bit about the property process? So you identified the site. What was the method of purchase?
So this was a cash purchase with some angel investment. And we purchased it because I had this very good relationship with the local authority commissioner. She was involved right from the beginning with the choice of the building. She came out, viewed it with me pre-purchase, and agreed it could meet the needs of the tenants that she'd identified. So we bought it as a cash purchase, which I'm so grateful for, because of all the delays and the processes through planning.
You were stuck on a bridge or
something. I would be really stuck with this. Yeah, absolutely. So that's been, I think, one of my saving graces, definitely. And luckily the investor involved is fully on board with the process.
And was this a standard contract, or was it through some other sale method, like an auction, or?
No, we bought it at a real bargain price. It was a straightforward cash purchase, but we got it very cheaply. So I decided, and one of the things when you're looking at supported living schemes is you have to always have other exits for your scheme. And it scares me sometimes as people are talking about supported living more and more, Will, that people are like, oh, it's going to be a supported living scheme, and people aren't thinking about alternate exits. You need to always be mindful that local authority commissioners change their minds, you know, demand changes, funding processes change. So our intention is that this will be 13 flats for individuals with mental health problems, you know, but if that all changes, the whole way we've designed it and applied for the planning and everything is that we can actually just say, right, fine, this process hasn't worked. We can develop it for private rental. We can split it and sell it as individual properties. So you always need to have your exits. And before when I was identifying the site, the social club building is actually on quite a big piece of land within an area of regeneration in the city. So I could see that actually, if all else failed, we could potentially level that building and put new build houses on and do it as a new build site. So I had various different options right from the beginning. So even though my intention was supported living, I had lots of different ways that I could use that site if it didn't work.
And in terms of your, so that was the front end and making sure that you, there were alternate routes that if things didn't work out in plan A, what about, how did you organise things as a, I suppose as a group of partners? So some people had put the money in, you internally, typically there's a bit of, do you have an external project manager or is that one of the team? How have you set it up?
Yeah, so I have a project manager who is great from a company who does quite a lot of supported living schemes around the country, but is based locally to me and has really good connections. So I've worked with him on other bits and pieces and he's just felt on a scheme that didn't work previously, but you know, he's a good fit for where I am, understands the bits I don't know so well and is very, very good at advising me on that. And I also have a really good architect who equally sort of steps in. He's an architect who isn't just an architect. He's very good at advising on scheme viability, getting involved in it. His name's Tony Horsey, and he's just great at kind of giving you that. He's good at giving me straightforward advice and telling me what he thinks, which is what I really need at times, is actually and someone else to bounce ideas off. And so it feels less lonely when you can go, is that right? Is it not right? What should I be doing here? You know, and you need other people around you who can bounce those ideas. And so with my architect and my project manager combined, that's been really, really valuable, particularly through this sort of battle through planning, through the Section 106 appeal, the whole kind of process that we're having to go through.
Using a planning consultant or is it the architect running that process or how have you been?
The architect's been running the planning process. We used a planning consultant right at the beginning when we went for a pre-app and we ran that in conjunction at the same time that the purchase was going through. So we did submit a pre-app right at the beginning before we exchanged, just to make sure, because obviously being a social club and a licensed premises, it's seen as a community resource. Mm-hmm. And so you have to build a case as to why this is no longer a community resource and to enable to develop it. I mean, the licensee had been declared bankrupt. It hadn't been running very well for a long time. So it wasn't actually a terribly useful community resource as it had been running. So we felt there was quite a strong case for a change of use. But obviously we wanted to make sure we had that. So we used a planning consultant right at the beginning for that process. But then when we've submitted the planning for this, my architect has acted as the planning consultant for us. He has experience in doing that. So,
Well that's great. And in terms of the running the projections and the budgets, there's the quantity surveyor function. Is that being, I presume that's done by the project manager or they've subbed that out?
Yeah, the project manager's taken a role in doing that for us. So, you know, we've used Jamie Carter from Mace Green as our project manager and he's helped us to get those figures and get some certainty around build cost and stuff. So, yeah,
absolutely. Well, that's great. And what's your perception with what's happening with build costs? Like if contractors were giving you indicative numbers, a number of months ago, does it feel like there's a bit of upward pressure, downward pressure? Like what's the...
I think there is definitely there's an upward potential pressure, but it's very hard to quantify, it feels like at the moment. It feels like everyone's saying, oh, it's going to probably be a bit more expensive, but I haven't seen it, the true evidence for it. I'm hearing about potential shortages and struggles with some supplies on sites for some of the timber, some of the PVC windows, things like that. I'm hearing a potential challenges as well. So I guess that's only going to increase costs, you know, but I think it's also access to the right resources, you know, the right bits and pieces that you need for your build are going to be challenging as well. So I think it's going to be an interesting time.
Okay. And in terms of your feel for what's happening in the wider market. Has there been a bit of an uplift locally in values?
Yeah, completely. So it feels to me like a lot of the world wants to move to the Southwest. As I said, we're down in Devon.
Why wouldn't you?
I know it's a beautiful place to be, but it feels like I think since lockdown, since people realizing they can work remotely, there's been a big move towards coastal areas of the UK or beautiful areas of the UK. And Devon's certainly seen a massive increase in demand. And demand is way outstripping supply here at the moment. I've been talking to local people who have been, you know, trying to find new tenancies, you know, new places to rent. And there's just properties are not available to rent or to purchase. Things are flying and prices are going up and up. So it feels like there's massive demand here. The market feels very, very hot. And it's very difficult. You know, I've been approached by lots of providers, particularly down here in Devon, looking for more properties and hearing heartbreaking stories of people kind of stuck in hospital. I was hearing a story of a young man who's in hospital 200 miles away from where he should be in Devon. So he's away from his friends and family. He needs a home locally. And I'm struggling into how I can kind of actually find the right property for him while the market is so hot without me becoming a motivated buyer, which obviously, as we know, as property investors is exactly where you don't want to be. But it's very, very difficult at the moment.
So it's been clear for decades that we need to build more houses as a country. Do you concur with that? And do you think it's getting worse?
I think we need more properties. I'm always reluctant about the greenfield site building. You know, I kind of feel like there is so much brownfield that isn't being utilized. There's so many buildings that are empty, that aren't being used properly. And I really feel passionately that we need to be redressing those issues before we start attacking more and more of our greenfields. So I feel like we need to be looking at our brownfield sites. We need to be looking at the horrific number of empty properties that there are in each town, each area. When you look at the numbers, they're staggering. And actually, they would go a long way to redressing some of the need for property.
I haven't seen an updated figure, but in 2019, or quarter one 2019, there were 20,000 vacant commercial premises in Greater London. Of which 11,000 had been vacant for more than 2 years. That would, you know, it varies obviously from location to location, but there's obviously lots of opportunities in and around the retail and commercial areas for conversion into quality housing. What do you think the upcoming planning changes? Do you think it's a step in the right direction? Are there issues that you can see as a developer with those?
I think anything that's going to make development simpler and make the planning process simpler and maybe more transparent is to be welcomed. It's such a complicated process to get schemes through, and it's a barrier for a lot of property investors and developers. I think there's opportunity there, and I think hopefully it will translate to actually making a difference to people. As you say, you know, there are so many buildings that are empty that need to be being used and need to be converted. And I think anything that we can do to make that process simpler, particularly, you know, the effects of COVID, the effects of people not being in the office so much, it's only going to increase the amount of commercial space that is empty, I think, sadly. And I think we need to be utilising that to make a difference for people. And I think it's about developing the right kind of properties for people who need them as well. I think it's about being sensitive to what properties required. You know, there is a massive need for supported living property. There's a massive need for individuals to have homes of their own, not necessarily great big blocks of flats, but actually people need to, you know, people who maybe don't want to or can't live with others, but need support staff with them and need their own properties. You know, I think we need to be looking at exactly what's needed. You know, societies are very diverse. We're made up of huge diversity as a society. And I feel like our housing provision doesn't match that diversity at the moment. If you are physically disabled and you need to rent a property or purchase a property, there's very few adapted properties available for you particularly if you are on housing benefits or on the lower income side of things, there's almost no properties available. And that's a massive, massive problem that I think as property investors and developers, we've got a duty to redress and consider when we're looking at properties that we develop.
Right. Well, Lisa Brown, so once again, thanks for coming on. And I'm going to put a little plug in for your supportedlivinggateway.com, which is one of the, I suppose, leading platforms for matching supported living providers with property. And if you're a property investor or a provider of supported living, it's a place you can get together. I think it's free to care providers, and there's a nominal listing fee for the property investor. And I also believe you've got a training course, which I think we've spoken about previously on other episodes, for people who are looking to understand supported living as a as an investment concept and how it all works. So check that out, supportedlivinggateway.com. Lisa Brown, you're most welcome.
Thanks, Will. Thank you.
And I'm Will Mallard. This is My Property World. Thank you.
Welcome to My Property World, a light and informative look at all things property. We have designed this series for people involved in property and property finance in the UK market. However, we do take examples from all around the property world. Our aim is for us to make money from property together, whether that be buying, selling, financing, trading, or getting involved in a deal in another way. We do this by informing, entertaining, and enjoying ourselves talking property, which gives you a chance to get to know us, what we're up to, and to check us out until you're ready to make money together. In the meantime, My Property World is free and fun, so plug in your headphones and enjoy. We would love for you to like, share, and comment, so please do on social media. And if you have questions, ideas for topics, or deals you would like to explore, we're always looking for guests, so get in touch via the My Property World profile.